Sure, Jesus was an amazing example to us, but what confidence... Hold on, somebody just throw me another question here. Sorry. Obviously, I don't know how to use this thing either. Okay, sure. Sure, Jesus was an amazing example to us, but what confidence can we have that what the Bible says about him is true? If Jesus is just a story, why care?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great question. It's a good question. C.S. Lewis famously said, when you look at Jesus, you've really only got three options, that he's Lord or he's a liar or a lunatic like that. And then I saw on a forum once that one really smart atheist said, no, actually, there's a fourth option you've forgotten about, and that is that he's a myth, that the whole thing is just made up. Then it doesn't really matter what you think he said, because he didn't actually really say those things, because he wasn't really real. What we've got in front of us in the Bible is we've got, particularly the first three Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, John, we have really, really, really early accounts of his life. Accounts that we're able to look at the authenticity of the accounts. There's some really good scholarly books out there that look at them and say, when you look at these accounts, it really, really looks like these are eyewitness accounts. There's a really famous guy by the name of Richard Borkham. He's a really smart guy who lectures up in Scotland, and he wrote a book called Jesus and the Eyewitnesses. And he looks at all sorts of little details in the Gospels that give the impression that the Gospels are certainly eyewitness accounts, things that you wouldn't be putting into the Gospels if you were trying to make up the story, if you were trying to fabricate stuff. That's a very big, long scholarly work, and there's a lot of information in there. And so I look at that sort of stuff, and I look, this is pretty convincing. As a person who understands a little bit about ancient history, how ancient history works, we just really have nothing like the Gospels in any other genre of ancient history. They are that unique, they are that different, and they are that compelling then as eyewitness testimonies. In terms of his just his general existence, there's a really good guy in Australia by the name of John Dixon who writes a lot on this all the time. He's an Anglican minister in Sydney, and he also runs a thing called the Center for Public Christianity. He has this one saying that he says he will eat his book on the historicity of Jesus if you can find one credible secular scholar at a recognized university who believes that Jesus didn't exist. He hasn't eaten his book yet. Because that's just, anybody who kind of comes along and says, well, Jesus didn't really exist. So there is this Jesus myth movement. They're really not credible scholars. And I'm not talking here about Christian scholars. I'm talking about secular scholars at recognized universities. If you go and you sit with my brother at the ancient history department at UCT, and you mentioned, well, maybe Jesus was a myth, most of the faculty there who are Christian, now all of the faculty there who are not Christians would laugh at you and say, no, that's ridiculous. We know very well that Jesus lived, and we know a lot about his life. And we're generally pretty happy that the Gospels are pretty good synopsis of his life. Now, they might obviously say, well, we believe some of the parts have been changed because we don't have all those Christian convictions. That's something you've obviously got to come to your own conclusion on. You've got to look at this and say, is this real, is this not? I'm convinced it's real. I don't have any... When I sit and have my own doubts, that's not one of my big doubts. That's not one of the things where I'm really worried about it, just because I know too much in that area to know that it's really not a major doubt. People might disagree about the significance of Jesus, but they don't really disagree about the main features of his life in the history departments around the world. So it's never really been something that's unsettled me in my faith from that count. Okay. I don't know if that's helpful.
Yep. Maybe just to follow on to that, Stephen, what are some of the instances in the Gospels that give us an assurance that it's true?
Sure. So you've got little things. In Richard Borkham's book, he lists things like when Jesus calms the storm, we get all sorts of little details, like the number of boats. We get details like that there was a pillow at the head of the boat that Jesus put his head on. And these are not the sort of details. You don't have other genres like that in the ancient world where people would put that sort of detail in. The only genre comparable to that we actually have is the modern novel, which you only get from like beyond Shakespeare onwards, where people are putting that amount of detail in. And the reason they put that amount of detail in is because they're trying to make it look real. So when you read a modern novel, you want the sense of this is real. If you read Dion Brown, you want to hear about Dion Mayer, I'm mixing my authors up there. Dion Mayer, you want to hear about Table Mountain and about Krutoskir and all that, and he puts all the details in to make it realistic and lifelike. Now, you have no genres like that in the first century, but then the Gospels come along and they read just that way, which is weird. unless these are a bunch of people trying to record eyewitness accounts. So there's examples like that. There's other examples that are, I can't remember if this is in his book or not, but like the fact that Jesus appears to woman in the resurrection. Now, if that is a person making that story up, he is a moron, and he doesn't know what he's doing, and he doesn't know how to make up a good story, because if Jesus rises from the dead, the person you want Jesus to appear to is a card-carrying Pharisee who's part of the Sanhedrin and who has a whole lot of religious clout with everybody, because then straight away he'll go, oh, see, Jesus rose from the dead, and no one will worry about it anymore. But Jesus rises, and he appears to women whose testimony doesn't count in a law court, whose testimony is disregarded by most of the people. That's why the disciples run back. They're like, no, 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 we don't believe this. We're not going to take your word for it. We know you, but we're not going to take your word for this. We're going to run back and check us out for ourselves. So you've got details like that. You've got details like the apostles always coming off as really bad and doing stupid things all the time. And so you've got these conspiracy theorists who are wanting to say, look, the apostles got together later on and colluded to have these gospels manufactured the way they wanted them. And then you're thinking, well, if I was going to collude to have a book written about me, I certainly wouldn't paint myself in the light that I'm painted in these books. Peter, we know Peter is the main source behind the Gospel of Mark, and he comes off terribly in Mark. So you're kind of going, that's a little bit weird, unless this stuff actually happened, and he's just telling Mark exactly what happened, when it happened, and how it happened. So I think there are numerous details, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. There are numerous details like that that make us look at the New Testament and go, this is not like the other genre that was around that time. It looks like eyewitness reporting.
Yeah, and I suppose perhaps to add to that is the fact of Jesus on the cross. If the apostles and the early church wanted to present a figure that the world should follow, the cross is the last place they would have put Jesus. Mm-hmm. It was the worst position you can be in. Even the Romans themselves understood that. They wouldn't put their own people on a cross. And yet here the apostles are saying, here's our king. He's on the cross. Mm-hmm. If that wasn't true, then the books they wrote to try and prove that Jesus is real is actually ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So there's many of those proofs, and there's many resources for you to look into that. Next question. Others in the Bible rise from the dead too. What makes Jesus' resurrection so special?
Sure. The main thing that makes it so special is the other people die again. Jesus doesn't die again. He's alive today, reigning the right hand of the Father. And so their death was just prolonged. Their life was just elongated a little bit. There's a significant difference. Also, the other thing is most of those people didn't walk around claiming to be God prior to their death and then rising again, say, look. So those are more people who are looking to God for help, dying and then rising again.
Did everybody hear that? So nobody else who died in the scriptures went through the same sort of death before they were resurrected. If Jesus knew that he was immortal and would rise again, how can we say it was a sacrifice?
Sure. This is that question that comes up every time. This actually came up the last time I did this series of talks, and I'm trying to really think what I said that time, because it was really good.
you think?
I think it's a sacrifice in that we don't fully comprehend the level of spiritual trauma Jesus enters into when he dies on behalf of sinful humanity. And so even if you might want to say, well, Jesus knew he was going to come alive again, so it's not really such a big deal. When you say that from a place of naivety where you don't understand what he's entering into. And we know that something hugely significant was going on because we look at the Garden of Gethsemane and we see the Son of God, who is normally walking around the countryside of ancient Palestine, casting out demons, destroying evil in his wake. With a touch of a hand, a person comes up and touches him and they're bleeding from, which none of the doctors can solve, is gone. He's normally got this power and this presence, but just before he goes to the cross, he's down on his knees and he is praying and he is bewildered. From a human point of view, he is bewildered. He is confused. He is terrified. And he is saying, Father, I'm going to hold on to you here. If there's another way we can do this, let's do it. But if not, I'm going to hold on and we're going to get through this. And so you can come and say, yeah, but Jesus knew he was going to rise again from the dead. And I would say, well, yeah, maybe, but whatever he was doing in that cross, the cosmic sense and the spiritual sense of what was being achieved at that cross is something beyond what I can comprehend. The pain, the suffering was beyond what I can comprehend and get my head around. And so I don't, it's inconsequential to me in that sense of whether or not he knew he was going to be raised from the dead. I think that's what I said last time, but I'm not entirely sure.
Good. That was good. A question from my side. You made a reference to the fact that Jesus, the other people who resurrected died again. Jesus is still alive. Now, obviously, we live in a world, a physical world, where we say, if I can't see it, it's not true.
Sure.
What would you say to that? You say Jesus is alive, but where is he?
Yeah. So what are we going on? Essentially, with this Jesus thing, we're going on, according to the testimony of the New Testament, the eyewitness accounts. And that's actually what the New Testament itself says we should be going on. We should be passing down the gospel from one generation to one generation. And so what you really want to be sure of is, was there a generation who saw Jesus? Was there a generation who actually saw all this stuff and can legitimize it? And I think we have that in the gospels. And so Jesus himself says to that generation, blessed are the people who won't get to see me physically and still believe. He says it to Thomas. Mm. Thomas gets a bad rap for being doubting Thomas. I think that is the New Testament professors here, and they can come argue with me afterwards, but I think he actually gets a bad rap from us Christians. I think he's actually a very studious person who wants to know that this thing is real. And so he says to his fellow disciples, I won't believe until I can put my hands in the holes in his hands and in his side. He's determined to believe that this is truth and to base it on something objective. And then when he does get the chance to do that, he says, my Lord, my God. And Jesus says, you're blessed, but the people are going to believe without having seen because of your testimony. They're going to be even more blessed. And so what we are doing is we're following this long line of testimonies of the gospel message being passed on from one to another. That's why the New Testament is so big on guarding that gospel deposit. There are so many letters written later on by the Apostle Paul and others to say, guard that good deposit, because that's the thing that saves us. We're taking what those guys saw and we're passing it down the generations, to the next generation, to the next generation, to the next generation. And that's how we are finding our hope and our sense of meaning in Jesus. Now, there are other reasons, and that's partly what's going to make up some of my next two talks. It's not just that I'm only based on the historicity of Jesus back in the first century. That's not the only argument for belief in God. There are a bunch of other arguments, but it's a really powerful, strong one, I think, particularly when it's really hard to fault those original eyewitnesses and to discredit their story, which it is incredibly hard to do. Even your best kind of atheist debaters and that who are out debating the resurrection don't really come up with alternative readings of that history. They might come and say, well, I don't believe this happened because of X, Y reasons, but they never ever end up coming and say, okay, well, then how do you account for all the Jews converting to belief in a Trinity when they were all diehard monotheists and now all of a sudden they believe that Jesus, a man, is the Son of God? How do you account for that? How do you account for the empty tomb? How do you account for all the eyewitnesses? How do you account for the fact that the Romans just never exposed the whole thing at the end when people came and said he'd risen? And your average atheist scholar never really gives alternative histories. And so I'm going, well, if you're never giving alternative histories, why not just go with a straightforward reading of the history of what actually happened there?